I saw this sparring clip, which I'm sure many of you have also seen, of Joe Joyce sparring Alan Babbage. And it looked like great work for both guys. In the comments, interestingly, this was an IFL TV where I saw the clip. I don't know if it's elsewhere. But in the comments, most people were saying things like, good spar, but Joe's levels above, and this shows why Alan Babbage is too small, and so on. They seem to be very pro-Joyce comments. And even though they were respectful towards Babbage, they were still carrying on being very dismissive in terms of him just being too small and unskilled. Well, that's not the sparring clip that I saw. The sparring clip I saw was highly competitive, and if anything, Babbage was landing more clean shots. Yes, Joe Joyce, massively bigger than Babbage, and in the clinches, he was able to push Babbage back with relative ease because he's got all that extra weight and he's a very, very big, naturally strong man. You know, Manny Stewart used to talk about how Lennox Lewis was naturally strong and he would fight people like Michael Grant, for example, who were pumped up with weights. So they weren't naturally whatever Michael Grant weighed, 250 odd pounds. His natural frame was slimmer than that. And Manny Stewart would always go on about how a guy with natural size is always going to be strong, particularly in the long run over the course of a long fight, as opposed to a guy who's pumped his muscles up with weights. You know, he talked about fighters who are big because they've pumped themselves up with weights. They might be strong for a couple rounds, but after that, they become really, really weak. Whereas Lennox, being a guy naturally big, he could keep that strength all the way through. And the same situation with Joe Joyce. He's just a naturally big, you know, thick set man. So yeah, in the clinches, he was able to push Babbage back. But in the middle of the ring, I was impressed, to be honest with you, with Babbage. Obviously, they're wearing big gloves and what have you. Now, some people say that Joe Joyce was going easy on Babbage and he wasn't really. That's not what I saw. I saw Joe Joyce behaving the exact same way he behaves in his fights. He doesn't put 100% into every shot, Joe Joyce. He'll throw a lot of kind of pity-patty shots, just arm shots, and then once in a while, he'll sit down on a shot and throw a big one. And that's what Bryant Jennings talked about when he fought Joe Joyce, because they asked Bryant Jennings about Joyce's power. And Jennings said, at first, he didn't think Joyce had much power. But then, there was a couple of times when Joyce loaded up and hit him with a shot on the chest or something, and he was like, whoa, this guy really does hit hard. So, Joyce is not consistent with his power. He mixes it up. Yeah, he'll throw some arm shots here and there. He'll vary the power, basically. And that might be something that he just does naturally, or it could be something that he does intentionally to lull you into a full sense of security. I remember back in the days when David Tua fought, I think it was Darryl Wilson, and Lou Duver, who was handling him at the time, was it Lou Duver or Ronnie Shields? It was one of his team members, and they said that he set that knockout up against Darryl Wilson by throwing some lighter punches first. I think even Larry Merchant might have talked about it on the telecast. By throwing some lighter punches first and getting Wilson to be comfortable with Tua in the pocket. And once he gets comfortable, then Tua releases the real power, which he's been holding back. So perhaps Joyce does that to some extent, I don't know. But again, what I saw in that spar is exactly what I see from Joyce in fights. And yeah, for me, Alan Babbage was landing more clean shots. Joe Joyce has never been a difficult guy to hit. I'm not saying that Alan Babbage beats Joe Joyce based upon a couple of minutes of sparring footage. But what I am saying is the fans, I think, are suffering from some cognitive dissonance. A lot of fans out there, you know, acting like, oh, this shows that Joyce's levels above. That little clip did not show that. Based upon that little clip by itself, Alan Babbage against Joe Joyce would be competitive if you just based it upon that little clip. But of course, in a pro fight with little gloves on, you could do a lot more damage. And Joe Joyce's jab, as we know, is fantastic. And so the shots that Alan Babich was, you know, able to block, because Joyce is wearing big old gloves, right? I don't know what they are, 18-ounce or 20-ounce flies. Some of those shots can't quite get through the guard. You know, you're wearing a big headgear and stuff like that, big bulky gloves. Some of the shots can't get through the guard. So punches which would be hit, which were hitting Babich on the headgear, not quite getting through to his face, with little 10-ounce gloves on, some of them shots are going to be getting through to his face. Okay, so I get that. But I'm just going on what we actually saw. And I think that the majority of fans, from the comments that I read, weren't giving Babich the credit that he deserved for how well he did in that spar. It's as simple as that. So again, to reiterate, because people always like to misquote and take things out of context, I'm not saying that Alan Babich beats Joe Joyce. I don't even know how far Alan Babich can go. Can he even win? Well, he's not British, but would he even be able to beat somebody at British level? Because remember, it wasn't long ago when Daniel Dubois or Joe Joyce were fighting for British titles, right? Could Alan Babich beat a Daniel Dubois? Do you know? Could he beat a Nathan Gorman? Somebody like that? I don't know. Alan Babich is somebody who I find very entertaining. And that's the long and the short of it. It's not about me thinking he's going to go all the way and do this, that, and the other. I don't know. He does seem very crude. He does seem very hittable. He does seem like a sitting duck to any, especially, you know, top level heavyweight. But however far he goes, I'm going to enjoy the journey, that's for sure, because he gives it 100%. He's all in. And I can only respect a fighter like that, you know? Particularly when he's giving away so much in height, reach, weight, and so on. So, yeah, that's my take on that spar. I thought that based upon that tiny little clip, Babich got the better of it in terms of clean punches landed in that tiny little clip. That doesn't mean he got the better of it throughout the whole spar. Yeah, I think they only sparred 6 rounds. That's what Babich said in an interview I watched. So maybe for the majority of the other rounds, Joe Joyce got the better of it. I don't know. Unless they released the whole thing, none of us will know unless we were there in the camp. So give me your thoughts in the comments below. If you saw the footage, what do you think of it? Were you surprised at all? Did you, like me, think that Babich was the one that landed the more shots? Or were you one of these people who thinks that it showed Joe Joyce was levels above Babich for whatever reason? Let me know in the comments below. So after Tyson Fury apparently, reportedly, pinged affirmative for the you-know-what, he has been seen, been pictured in, I don't know where it is, Vegas or wherever else in America, taking selfies with fans and what have you. It doesn't appear to be any kind of quarantine or anything like that. And obviously this begs the question, did he actually ping affirmative at all? Because there's people out there assuming that what Tyson Fury is saying and what his team is saying and the reports coming out of that camp, there's people assuming that it's actually true. Oh yeah, but they all pinged affirmative. Says who? Have you seen the paperwork for that? Maybe they just said that they did. Maybe one person used orange juice or lemon juice to ping affirmative, and then it was just assumed that when everyone else said that they pinged affirmative as well, that it was true. Maybe it wasn't true. Or maybe they all used orange juice. I don't know. But it does raise eyebrows and raise questions when you see Tyson Fury out and about in all these pictures. But then again, maybe the rules are different for Nevada or wherever Tyson Fury is. I don't know. There was also a picture of Joseph Parker and conflicting reports about what the situation is with Parker, because there was apparently reports from New Zealand that Parker had pinged affirmative, but then his manager, David Higgins, came out and said, Parker doesn't have it. So there's all this conflict going on. Then there was Joseph Parker on Instagram, on his Instagram story, filming himself at UFC after he'd apparently pinged, right? So what's that all about? So you got Parker doing that. You got Fury apparently out and about with all these different fans taking selfies. You know, questions have to be asked. And this is why I have to imagine Eddie Hearn is very skeptical about the official reason for this fight being postponed. Eddie Hearn seems to think it's probably not what the reports are saying, and that it's actually them postponing the fight because of poor ticket sales and the fight just not being commercially viable at this point. Whatever the case may be, as Frank Warren has said and others, this is not good for Tyson Fury. He really needs to stay active. I mean, it's not good for Deontay Wilder either. But Tyson Fury, as we know, has had issues with discipline. And he's had issues keeping himself in the right place mentally. And he wanted to stay active so that he wouldn't encounter the same issues in terms of discipline and being in the right place mentally. So this fight getting pushed back is very, very bad for him. I've seen some people within the boxing fraternity saying this actually plays into Wilder's hands. And it might, because Wilder is actually a pure athlete. Tyson Fury isn't. And I always felt as though at some point that is going to come back to haunt Tyson Fury. The fact that he doesn't stay in shape and live the Spartan life of a fighter eventually is going to come and bite him in the butt. Because these guys like Wilder, like Anthony Joshua, like Alexander Usyk, they stay in shape 365. And boxing history shows that you can have tremendously talented fighters. Roberto Duran, for example, tremendous talent. But due to lack of discipline, he ended up losing to guys who he really shouldn't have lost to a good few times. James Toney being another one. Tremendously talented, but because of lack of discipline, ended up losing some fights he shouldn't really have lost to people who weren't as talented as him. And Tyson Fury came close several times in his career to losing to people that he shouldn't be losing to. Early on in his career, obviously, there was the John McDermott fights. There was the Steve Cunningham fight. There was the Nevin Pajkic fight. But even more recently, when he got in there against toothpick brain Otto Wallin. So Tyson Fury has been living dangerously for quite a while. And I have to imagine eventually it's going to catch up with him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Tyson Fury can buck the trend. But historically, this has proven to be the case time and time again. You can be as talented as anything, but if you don't have that consistency of discipline and staying in shape, it will come back to haunt you. So anyway, let me know what you guys think in the comments below about this Tyson Fury situation, whether the official reason for the Deontay Wilder fight being postponed is actually true, or whether you guys are in the same camp as Eddie Hearn and many other people, and you're highly suspicious of this official reason and you find it very dubious. You just don't trust the word coming out of that camp. Because how do we verify anything that they're saying? And as I've said before, it's very easy now to falsify these things, right? There's school kids in the UK doing it. So it's very easy to falsify it. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. This story is several days old now, but I've had some things to do, hence why I haven't made any videos in quite a few days. But I want to give my take on this situation with Dillian Whyte offering to step in and face Deontay Wilder. Since this Tyson Fury fight is apparently postponed, Dillian Whyte saying, yeah, I'll step in and fight Wilder. Eddie Hearn actually proposed it to Dillian Whyte, apparently. That's what Hearn said. And Dillian Whyte jumped at the chance. But subsequently, Dillian Whyte has said that the WBC should elevate him to full champion and make Tyson Fury champion emeritus or whatever it is. And then he defends his title against Deontay Wilder. He doesn't seem, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe he said something else in a different video, but he doesn't seem to be calling for him and Wilder to fight in a final eliminator. And it's fair enough. I'm not criticizing Dillian Whyte for it at all, because at the end of the day, as much as he wants to smash Deontay Wilder to pieces, that's still a very dangerous fight. I know Dillian Whyte mocks him I mock Deontay Wilder for the way he behaves, but I'm under no illusions that this is a very, very dangerous man. Very, very dangerous. So it's perfectly understandable that Dillian Whyte, at this stage, in this particular situation, would prefer to be champion and fight Deontay Wilder rather than doing it in an eliminator. Because disaster struck when he fought Alexander Povetkin. And he's had so many back-to-back-to-back tough fights, Dillian Whyte. And obviously they're looking at his next fight being more of a tune-up, stay busy fight. And he deserves that. He fully deserves that because of the run that he's been on in terms of fighting very, very dangerous opposition. So yeah, that's my take on what Dillian Whyte said with regards to taking on Deontay Wilder. He would prefer to do it as champion, and Wilder being, I guess, voluntary. I'm not sure how it would work. But in terms of whether Wilder would go for that, I'm sure you guys are all in agreement that he wouldn't. Deontay Wilder, as far as I can tell, doesn't really have much say over his career. Now, whether that's because of contracts or whether that's because his handlers have got such a mental hold over him, I'm not sure. Maybe it's a bit of both. Because we all remember when he turned down that fantastic DAZN deal, which was said to be worth north of $100 million. And the reason, apparently, this is the word on the grapevine, is that Wilder was very happy and excited and he was looking to sign, but then Shelley Finkel got in his ear and said, no. They haven't done this and they haven't done that and they haven't shown us the other. And he basically convinced Wilder, and it's not very difficult for a member of Wilder's team to get in his ear and convince him of something ridiculous. He convinced Wilder that it wasn't in his best interest to take this fantastic deal. So, yeah, Wilder, I don't think would fight Dillian Whyte under these circumstances. I wish I was wrong, but I don't think he would. It's obviously a short notice for Dillian Whyte, but he's in training. Deontay Wilder's obviously in training. So the fans would love to see it. But with all that there is at stake, for both guys, really, but particularly for Deontay Wilder, his whole career's on the line at this point. And he's looking to get it, well, his team are looking to get him back in there against Tyson Fury. And surely they feel that the Tyson Fury fight is a far bigger fight financially than Dillian Whyte. And I'm sure the handlers of Wilder must be contemplating the possibility that Deontay Wilder's days are numbered as a serious commercial entity. And therefore, what would they rather do? Put him back in against Tyson Fury for far more money? And remember, if he loses to Fury again, well, he's viewed by many people, maybe most people in boxing, as the best heavyweight in the world. So losing to the best heavyweight in the world, okay, there's no shame in that. But losing to a Dillian Whyte, who is a very good heavyweight, but he doesn't quite have the status in boxing in the eyes of most fans and pundits and experts, doesn't have the same status in boxing as Tyson Fury does. So it will be a bigger blow to Deontay Wilder if he was to lose to a Dillian Whyte as opposed to losing to a Tyson Fury again. Certainly commercially, it'll be a bigger blow. So yeah, I seriously doubt, and you know, it's been several days now, we haven't heard anything as far as I'm aware from Team Wilder, but I seriously doubt he would go for that. I seriously doubt his team would allow him to go for that. Dillian Whyte has more autonomy. He works with Eddie Hearn on a fight-by-fight basis. So if he wanted to go ahead and do that, I mean, apparently it was Eddie Hearn that suggested the fight anyway, but even if Eddie Hearn hadn't suggested it, Dillian Whyte appears to have a lot more autonomy because, again, he's not locked into any kind of long-term contract with Hearn, as far as I'm aware, and as far as Eddie Hearn and Dillian Whyte themselves keep on saying. So, yeah, that's my take on it. Give me your take in the comments below. Dillian Whyte, Deontay Wilder, and, you know, in terms of this obsession, and it is an obsession, and I don't hate it, you know? I like beef and all this kind of stuff in boxing. That's what makes it exciting a lot of the times when there's tension between fighters. But Dillian Whyte is obsessed with Deontay Wilder. He's obsessed with beating him, at least. I'm not saying he's obsessed with him as a person. He's obsessed with fighting Deontay Wilder. He wants to get in there and smash him to pieces. And I've said this before, you know, it's what the rumor has always been. And that, you know, evidence for this rumor has broken the surface before. I think in Twitter exchanges between Wilder and Dillian Whyte. And so the beef apparently started over a girl who Dillian Whyte was dating while he was in the Klitschko training camp. That's the word that I've heard. And what happened is, well, let me not say he was dating the girl, but he had some kind of, you know, either casual relationship with her, as in London we call it a link. Let's say he was linking the girl, and Deontay Wilder came along and took the girl. That's the rumor, okay? And if that is true, then you could understand why Dillian Whyte is so obsessed with smashing Deontay Wilder to pieces. I don't know whether it's true. I'm just telling you what the rumor is. And it would make sense of why Dillian Whyte just seems so angry at Deontay Wilder and why he's targeted him specifically for all this vitriol. Because he doesn't target any other heavyweights this consistently for so long. Yeah, there's been times when he's had his spats with Tyson Fury, with Anthony Joshua, with Derek Chisora, you know, several other fighters out there. But with Wilder, even now Wilder's not champion, Dillian Whyte is still obsessed about smashing him to pieces. You know, I wondered whether the obsession might go away once Wilder was no longer champion. But no, Dillian Whyte still wants to beat this guy up. And it's great. You know, I'd love to see the fight. I'm not criticizing him for it. I just find it, you know, a curious thing that he's this obsessed with one, you know, with fighting one guy or beating one guy. Pause. Let me know what you guys think about it in the comments below. This Dillian Whyte, Deontay Wilder situation. There still hasn't been an official announcement for this Anthony Joshua Alexander Usyk fight. I've seen a couple interviews with Eddie Hearn where he says it's down to securing a venue that will allow them to have a certain number of fans, be it Wembley, Tottenham Hotspurs, wherever. Because these two fighters are going to be paid an enormous amount of money, and therefore they need a certain amount of fans in the venue to make the event commercially viable. So I get that. I was disappointed to hear word, and I don't know if this has been officially confirmed, but the word on the grapevine is that Usyk has agreed to a rematch clause for this fight. And you guys should know my views on that by now, for those of you who don't, and maybe for those of you who are new fans to the sport of boxing, relatively speaking. Ordinarily, a mandatory challenger does not have to sign a rematch clause to fight any champion, no matter how big the champion is in terms of a commercial entity, how famous he is throughout the history of boxing. As far as I'm aware, certainly as far as I've been alive and I've been watching the sport since the 1980s, it's always been the case that the mandatory doesn't have to sign a rematch clause. He can go ahead, fight the champion. If he wins, he can sail off into the sunset. Now, this started changing during the Klitschko era. I want to say the back end of the Klitschko era is when I noticed it anyway, whereby people like, I think it was Kubrat Pulev, had to sign a rematch clause. I'm not 100%, but I know for sure Tyson Fury did. He signed, when I say had to, I don't know if he had to, but he did sign a rematch clause for that Klitschko fight when he was mandatory. And I remember saying at the time, what's that all about? Why would Fury go ahead and do that? As a mandatory, you don't have to sign a rematch clause. And just imagine if Fury hadn't done that. He wouldn't have had all that mix-up with the Vladimir Klitschko rematch. You know? He could have gone on and fought somebody else, and obviously he had that UCAD thing hanging over his head, but who knows how it would have panned out if he hadn't signed that rematch clause. Now, I've seen Eddie Hearn in a couple interviews, or at least one interview, talk about why this happens, because Eddie Hearn is, you know, one of the perpetrators of doing this. And he says that the mandatory is simply offered a shed load of extra money to sign a rematch clause. And in some instances, the champion will threatened to vacate the belt unless the mandatory agrees to the rematch clause as well. You know, I can't help but suspect there's something more going on than that, because you look at a guy like Oleksandr Usyk, he's a big star in Ukraine. If he beats Anthony Joshua, sky's the limit for him. He doesn't need Anthony Joshua if he beats him first time around. So I'm kind of baffled as to why he would do this, if he indeed he has done this. If indeed this delay is actually down to the venue situation and not a sticking point of the rematch clause. Because that's what I thought it might be initially, that Team Usyk just didn't want to sign this rematch clause that Eddie Hearn was so enthusiastic for them to sign. So yeah, that's my feelings on rematch clauses for mandatories. Shouldn't be going on. Obviously, the sanctioning bodies don't have much integrity, so they're not really going to enforce their rules. They're not going to tell promoters, particularly a promoter as big as Eddie Hearn, stop doing this rematch clause thing for our mandatories. In our rules, mandatories don't have to have a rematch with a champion if they beat him. So anyway, I've seen the pictures of Usyk with this apparent weight gain, putting on muscle, bulking up. I've seen him sitting at tables in certain pictures with enormous plates of food, looking like Desperate Dan. You know, from the comic book back in the days, Desperate Dan would have like cow pies and these enormous plates of food he would eat. That's how Usyk was looking. Crazy giant plate of food. Now, again, I've said in the past that I'm not a fan of Usyk piling on loads of extra muscle against Anthony Joshua, because you're attempting to match a guy, or at least close a gap, in an area where you're always going to be inferior. Anthony Joshua is always going to be physically stronger than Oleksandr Usyk. He's always going to be able to hit harder. There's nothing Usyk can do about that. Usyk's advantage against AJ is obviously speed, movement, mobility, fluidity. And by piling on all this extra weight, this muscle, he's actually reducing his own advantages over AJ. The speed, the mobility, the fluidity. Putting the extra muscle on takes away from that. So I don't think it's a good idea. I would give Oleksandr Usyk a much better shot against Anthony Joshua if he comes in no heavier than the very low 220s, but preferably around 217. Now, the thing about fighters is a lot of them are very macho. And although Usyk doesn't come across as one of the most overtly macho fighters, to be able to have done what he's done in his career and achieved so much, undisputed cruiserweight champion and so on, now stepping up to fight the heavyweight champion, you have to have a big ego to be able to do that, at least with regards to your ability in boxing. And so a lot of these guys are very macho, even though they might conceal it. And that's a double-edged sword. It helps you in some ways, but in other ways, it can actually work against you. And one way it can work against you is you go in there with a guy like Chaz Witherspoon or Derek Chisora, and you're not able to take them out. You're not able to produce a performance which wows the fans, because at heavyweight, fans are expecting huge knockouts. And it seems the vast majority of fans of heavyweight boxing nowadays are of the view that if you're not a big puncher, you can't make it in the heavyweight division. Well, I beg to differ. There's always been this misguided belief that you have to be a big puncher at heavyweight to be able to make it. And there's only been a few times in heavyweight history. Well, there's been quite a few times in heavyweight history, but I'm talking about during my time watching the sport, where certain fighters have come along and proven that actually you don't need to be a big puncher at heavyweight to be successful or be the champion. And during my lifetime, Evander Holyfield was the guy who proved that. So, and obviously, you know, there was some other guys that held belts. Chris Bird wasn't a big puncher and so on. But yeah, the point I'm making is, I think the criticism that Usyk got for those two performances against Chaz Witherspoon and Derek Chisora, where it was mainly people criticizing him for lacking power, being pushed onto the back foot, being manhandled. I suspect that might be the reason why he's decided to pile on all this extra muscle. And I think that's his macho pride getting the better of him. Listening to people, fans, so on, even certain individuals within the boxing industry, maybe other fighters. And he's said, you know what? I want to be able to stamp my authority on a fight more. Therefore, I'm going to pile more weight on. I think it's a big mistake. Big mistake. As I say, I would give Usyk far more of a chance against AJ if he came in a similar weight to what he was in his last couple fights. I think he should actually come in whatever he walks in the ring at when he fights a cruiserweight, whether that's 210, 212, I don't know what it is. He should come in against AJ that weight. Because if you look at, for example, the Olympics, I know it's only a 3-round fight, but if you look at the Olympics, when AJ fought Erislandy Savon in his first bout, Erislandy Savon is a small guy, not in terms of height and reach, but in terms of weight. He's a small guy. And Erislandy Savon was able to box rings around Anthony Joshua. I know people are going to say it was a long time ago. AJ's improved massively since then. And I agree. But to me, it showed in principle what can be done if you have the fluidity and the speed and you're not weighed down by all this muscle against somebody like Anthony Joshua, if you have that kind of skill set. So, yeah, I think it's an opportunity missed by Alexander Usyk. And I'll be very interested to see what he weighs in at. But my view is, the heavier he is, the more it favors Anthony Joshua. So I'll leave it there. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. And if you have any information, or maybe even any ideas about why this fight hasn't been officially announced yet. You know, maybe it is just the venue situation, but you know, maybe you got your own ideas. Let me know in the comment section below.